Okay, well, let's go ahead and call our meeting to order. We've got a full contingent of Citizens Advisory Group members present. Did everybody have a chance to review the minutes from the October 3rd meeting?
We did.
Excellent. No corrections, everything's good?
No.
Okay,
good.
Under new business, it said, under one, legal issues, it's going to be George and Dan. I have been moved over to number two, interviewing other sources.
Oh, was it me and Chuck?
Yeah, Chuck was going to sit in.
Yeah,
I think it's you and I are the legal, and he's, you're with Mark. Everything else goes to Rick.
Right, Rick, you're the chair now, so.
Oh, yeah, I failed.
Bad meeting, man.
You should have been there.
So it's Chuck.
So Chuck and I are doing legal.
It might be.
I read that. Yeah, Mark and Dan, I think.
Okay. But I think Chuck was also going to do some of the interview outsources.
Yeah, I was just going to fill in if anything was left hanging.
So Chuck can't get enough.
You and I need to touch base.
Yeah.
Chuck's everywhere.
Yeah. Okay, I'll make that change. You can sign him later.
That's perfect. Thank you.
I have no other issue.
Great. So we'll adopt the meetings, the meeting minutes as amended.
Yes.
That's perfect. Great. Well, before we get going, I'd like to ask if Fire Commissioner Jarman would go ahead and introduce.
You bet. I'd like to. We all know that Brad will be leaving the San Juan Fire District number 3. Brad has been, pretty much as long as I've been on the island, he has always been the face of the fire district. It'll be sad to see Brad go, but it'll be entertaining to keep calling Brad all the time to see where he hits the ball. But we brought him aboard today, our new fire chief, Chief Collins, he will be taking Brad's place, and he comes from a long background of combination fire departments and volunteerism and career people. Brings new light, brings new energy and everything to the fire district. And why don't you say a couple words? You're not short of words either.
I'm never short of words. I'm never short. Who's going to talk more, Bob or me? So it's an honor to be here. It was an honor to get sworn or sign our letter this afternoon. Bob's still worried that it was in invisible ink and that's going to disappear. But as Commissioner said, I started as a volunteer. I've risen through the ranks. Those of you that have read some of the articles that are out there, or Google search me, because that's what I seem to have found. Everyone I took faces with around, they've already done a Google search on me. I actually have a master's in psychology with organizational leadership as my focus. I was with Walton Valley down in the Portland area, which is the largest special protection district in the state of Oregon. I've been a medic for 30 years, taught paramedic school for about 10 or 12 years. My daughter actually is in paramedic school. For some reason, she wants to follow my footsteps. When I took over Savi as their first career chief, and we've been able to grow that, and when this came up, it was a fantastic opportunity. So I really appreciated the comment that was made in the newspaper about trading an island in Oregon for the San Juan Islands. So it's exciting to be here. My wife's up, so we're looking at places and getting that settled. And so right around the 1st of November, I should be up here with you guys on a regular basis. So it's exciting to be here and start to interact with all of you. So thanks.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And if we could also just take a moment, because he's still sitting here with a white shirt on.
we have two of those, yeah.
I think it would be a great opportunity for us just to personally thank you, Brad, for your service to our community and certainly all the work that you've been doing, helping us and kind of keeping us focused a little bit here. And your expertise is always appreciated, and hopefully we can continue to tap into that.
I will miss this entertainment.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Echo.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Excellent. So our first guest this evening is Dr. Michael Sullivan. And Dr. Sullivan, we have a very informal kind of discussion group. This is generally how we've been operating. And, you know, we really needed an opportunity to be able to talk with you a little bit about some of your perspectives of EMS service to some extent, to the extent that you've been involved on all the islands with both EMS and fire. And, you know, we've been tasked by three different boards to look at a possible consolidation of the EMS with the fire district. But, you know, as we've gone on, we've come across a number of issues, and this is a great opportunity for us to engage in a discussion with you and ask some questions. So if you're okay, we just kind of ask them as we go.
Sure.
And at any time you want to tap out, just raise your hand. And we'll make sure you don't get bogged down.
Okay, sounds good.
And I don't know if you wanted to make any introductory comments about your background and what your current roles are.
Sure. So my background initially was in the fire service. And ended up graduating from the University of Washington, going to medical school in Chicago, and doing an emergency medicine residency at the University of Pittsburgh. The reason I chose that, it was kind of the mecca of EMS at the time, still is. And from there, I was an assistant professor at the university and was involved as one of the directors of the City of Pittsburgh EMS, and also ran the largest helicopter program in the country. And then had a bunch of kids. And then somehow I came out to Anacortes actually to go camping in Washington Park, and I got sucked into Bellingham for the helicopter program. And from there, spent 25 years at in Bellingham until they tasked me to run the hospital here. During that time, being a father and an emergency physician and running their flight program wasn't enough, so I was also a firefighter and a fire commissioner for 6 years. And so I've kind of been in this service of this kind of stuff for a while. Currently, I am the San Juan County Medical Program Director, which basically is really a licensing and certification type of position. And I also serve the departments Orcas and Lopez by going and doing a quality improvement process teaching for the paramedics on a monthly basis. So I keep tight with their programs and with their EMTs and paramedics. And I mean, I talk to them on a daily basis. So there's really good communication there. And I kind of have, you know, I've been, I think, with Orca since 2003, the end of 2003. So I kind of understand the islands a little bit. And I found the more that you understand, the more you don't know, you know. And each island is completely different. So I always kind of factor that into any discussion, just because, you know, it's just different. So that's kind of what I do.
Great. Let me start with some questions from our members.
Sure. I realize that every situation, everybody has their own separate set of perspectives on things, and you have a very unique set of perspectives on EMS services here. So I'm wondering if you would like to comment, kind of comparing and contrasting what we see here now, currently, with what you've seen elsewhere in your very past, and how you perceive it's working, you know, what the challenges are.
Yeah, so we don't see a lot of third service EMS agencies. It's interesting, we've got a couple in our region. We've got one on Whidbey Island, and we had Skagit, which is now going through kind of an intense change, going back to the fire-based EMS system. I come from just basically fire EMS type system. That's kind of what I know and what's worked. Although, again, interestingly, Pittsburgh was a third service, you know, agency, large municipal third service agency. And they had significant challenges because of it. And it all just kind of goes back to the history and you know, until you kind of make some changes. I think that the separation of EMS and fire, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You need one responder that does all of this stuff. And I really kind of hold up ORCAS as kind of a model for the San Juans, where you know, they respond in a very consistent manner, can get out the door. They use all of their resources, whether it's a volunteer that just wants to drive the ambulance or the fire truck, or just wants to do rope rescue, or just wants to be a firefighter, or just wants to be an EMT. And we strive to kind of have firefighter EMTs. We want that. And we've kind of did a push, like, if you're going to come on the department, we really want you to kind of do all of it. But we'll take whatever we get. And because having that type of kind of permission from the department, the number of people actively involved in the department is huge compared to a lot of other agencies that I see. And the biggest challenge for a chief is I can't get people. You know, this whole volunteerism is just dying out. And it's a lot of money, you know, to have paid full-time staff. So you really kind of have to build a culture that respects and endorses any type of involvement that a community member wants to make in your organization. Right now, we kind of have a split, and the fire and EMS kind of get together on certain things, but they just don't get together enough to have that culture and have that communication. I think there's some that cross boundaries with San Juan Fire, so that's good, but throughout the entire organization, one patch, one organization, I think lends to kind of reducing a lot of problems that can occur, which really mostly come along the lines of communication. And then it kind of inhibits the culture in a certain degree, because they're, you know, you got different, you're separated. Mm-hmm. So, I think that the fire EMS model works. It's worked in a lot of other areas, and it could work here. It's working on Lopez. It's working on ORCAS. But again, like I said, each island is different. So Lopez is interesting. When I'm teaching at Lopez, I mostly deal with EMTs and paramedics. Rarely do I really get to see a lot of the firefighters. Some of them kind of like swoop in and, you know, want to say hey. But I don't get them all together like I do at ORCAS. They all come in together, eating together, talking together. There's that fellowship. So there's some little bit of separation on Lopez, and then just more separation here. So. Mm-hmm. Hope that answered your question.
Well, yeah. I mean, taking communication, volunteer recruitment and retention, and even training issues when they're separate is more of a challenge, and I get why that would be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And then the key, the whole glue to that is leadership. Got mm-hmm. to have the leadership. You've mm-hmm. got, you know, to be there and, yeah, really be able to put out small fire before the big fires. And, yeah.
And you've worked in Bellingham, other areas, via EMS under fire. Do you see the need of two separate chiefs, an EMS chief, a fire chief, or can you see that under one umbrella?
Well, the way that I've usually seen it work is you have a fire chief who's an administrator, who's kind of the top dog leadership guy, and then, you know, the fire chief has people that he can rely on, his inner circle. So for EMS, you've got a medical services officer, somebody who kind of knows the system, who's kind of got the pulse on the system, where the fire chief has got kind of gathering the pulse on everything, whether it's administration or commissioners or community needs, you know, volunteer retention, whatever it is, he's doing all of these things, but he's got people. And so from the EMS side, you would definitely want to have somebody who was a medical services officer to deal with that. I wouldn't expect the chief to get out of bed at 2 o'clock in the morning because, you know, his medical services officer is not getting a job in or something. Mm-hmm.
So you'd really see, like, your chief, and then you would have, whether you call them battalion chiefs or whatever, you have your medical services person, your training slash fire abuse. I mean, you can have whatever you want to call them, but you would have two distinct folks, one looking at the medical, one looking at fire, and they'd be working together as well as far as the response and training and everything else.
Yeah, you would basically, kind of just a quick example, is you would line up your top guys and you'd put a box in front of them and you would put certain things in their box and say, you're in charge of that, you're in charge of this, you're in charge of that. So everybody in the department knows, if I got a problem with my pager, I go to this guy. If I got a problem with, I don't have enough gauze, I go to this guy. If I got a problem with the pump leaking, I go to this guy. And you know, if I don't have any, if I can't figure out who to go to, then that's a problem, you know. And that's where kind of fires start, when people don't know who do I go to, and then they're going around people, and you know, that's where you kind of want to have that hierarchical organization.
Dr. Sullivan, though, you know, I've had an opportunity in my career to kind of look at a lot of systems across the country. And what I've seen with fire and EMS is that what I perceive is that the majority looked at least in the past. They're two very different forms of what they do. One is healthcare provision, one is really fighting fires. And it has appeared that in many of the situations, the predominant was always the fire side. And it was always kind of EMS that usually took a subservient side to the fire, from management to financial to its goals and so forth. It didn't mean that they didn't provide quality of care, but that, you know, the fire union, the fire push was always the kind of the predominant side. I think, you know, there's probably now 60% of the country is probably fire EMS model. Good 40 to 45% is your third party administrative healthcare. And healthcare is kind of changing. I mean, with community paramedicine, there's even a greater focus now on the medicine side. Fire is struggling, my perception is, and what I've seen is fire starting to struggle from financial support, because for one thing, they've done well in their education processes. There's been a lot of, you know, things that have been developed to prevent fires and so forth. So there's fewer fires, there's more health care. So in this particular situation here, I understand the past when they were together, there was some challenges that fire was seen as getting more of the resources, just a perception that I have of what I've read, than what EMS is. You suggest that having the organization be under one is probably a better approach. I understand, certainly from a limited resource perspective, especially in the county of 15 or 16,000 folks, and you have, and you don't have a lot of resources, you tax what exists and you do more with less. Do you feel that if there, and one other point that I want to make of that, usually anything, and I agree with you, anything is around leadership. It's how it's led, it's how it's charged, it's how it does. And it could function great underneath one entity, and it could shift over and suffer underneath another just because their focus is different and so forth. Do you think, one, the consolidation here, because we're now back to here, do you think that you see greater value end up being one. Can you lay your hands on what you would say would be better outcomes or better function or better delivery, better health care or so forth, if they consolidated? Do you feel that it would be just the same? Because some of the challenges that we're having to take on, of course, as you well appreciate, is that there could be issues around funding, and we have to go back to a vote process too. And so what would you see as the sell to be able to do that? What do you see as coming together? What do you perceive is going to be value substantial to promote that as the medic? I mean, healthcare is what EMS is all about. You're kind of that lead person in the healthcare of the county.
So I think what happened in the 70s and the 80s and even into the 90s, when did fire EMS explode? Late 70s?
99.
Okay.
They were always under fire until they became possible.
Okay. So what happened back then was a product of, individuals. And I think it would be hard for any commissioner or any citizen to kind of argue that 80% of the mission of the fire department now is medicine. It's medicine. And it's like that everywhere. And with the stricter fire codes, number of fires are decreasing. Yeah, we have to have response readiness for all of that stuff. We have to be able to do the training. But the major mission for most fire EMS agencies is EMS. And so once we kind of have that paradigm shift of thinking and we balance the resources, I don't think that's a problem. That's really an organizational view, and it should go into something. What kind of value can we bring? Well, if we use a career volunteer model where we actually have a staffed station 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, like we see over at Orcas. The turnout time at Orcas is about 2 minutes. That means you gotta get dressed into the ambulance in 2 minutes. How do I know that? Because I do it. Bell goes off, it's 2 a.m. I'm down there and I'm thinking, I totally beat everybody, and somebody's leaning out the door going, "You ready?" And I'm like, "What the heck?" And that's a culture thing. Here with EMS, they're very challenged in getting the ambulance out the door. Ambulance to roll. I think the paramedics are en route, but if I were to go to a scene of an emergency as a physician, I'm only one person. You need a team. One person is not a team. And you really can't get the things that you need done. And then, even if you could, you can't bring them anywhere because you don't have an ambulance. So when I hear the ambulance taking 20 minutes to roll on a significant emergency, that time delay is huge. And that translates into potential poor outcomes for the patient. And whether it's brain cells or heart cells or worsening infection, whatever it is. But I think that's the real value. And then it goes right back over to the fire side. Fire doubles every few minutes. So if you have somebody that doesn't have to, a crew that doesn't have to respond to the station, they're there. And they're dual purpose. Then boom, you're right out the door and you can mitigate whatever emergency is in the quickest fashion. So, I think that having the focus of one all hazards, all response department, that's kind of almost how you have to phrase it. Isn't that what we started calling Orcas? What was the term that we were using? All hazards?
All hazards,
yeah. So rope rescue, or marine rescue, or fire, or EMS, or cats in a tree. It doesn't matter. We're going to handle it all. And building that type of culture is huge. And right now we've got split cultures. So I think I could convince most people that you're going to see a significant increase in service. And I'm sure there are people out there that have called 911 and they've waited. And there are times, you know, if you live up at Roche Harbor, well, you're going to wait. But if there are firefighter responders up in the Roche Harbor area, they're going to respond. So you're going to get people from, you know, the entire island instead of just EMS going to an EMS response. So I think we're going to have a more robust response. Plus, we're going to have a quicker first response from in-house providers. And that is basically urban level of service in a rural environment. I think we can do it. Does that answer your question?
Yes. I mean, I think that it's fundamentally comes down to, as everything does, leadership, accountability, and how it is a function of, you know, how it's built. Because you're suggesting not only just, you're not suggesting in this as we're struggling with. I mean, it appears it's the lack of leadership that exists in what is today versus what the potential leadership might be if it moves over.
Yeah.
There's a perception and probably a reality that you would hope synergistically there's value in scale. So, you know, having a single organization with several missions, you can then economize with that. So hopefully there's a financial incentive, maybe even enough to offset what some of the, perceived losses might be in going into the elections. I mean, you know, there could be that. But again, you know, much of this is, okay, so if you take it from here and put it to here, is here going to be better? Is it going to really run better? Is it really going to be what you're suggesting that might be missing from what exists today?
Yeah. And I think the key moving forward is a unified voice, a clear vision, of the future, the overall organizational plan, clear goals, creating blueprints for achieving the goals, and then using language to build trust with the community. And if you kind of have to follow that pathway. If you don't, then you're going to have splinter groups attacking you from the woods, and you don't want that.
So to distill what you just said, which I think I've heard from both of you so far, Rick and Mike, is leadership. Because all of what you just said is the right leadership is going to make it work.
Yeah.
And the wrong leadership will break it. And that's kind of what we went through, frankly. I mean, we had leadership that didn't get along in the 80s and 90s, and so they splintered. And we ended up moving them apart so they didn't hurt each other. Whatever. And, maybe with the right leadership, again, you can make that work.
Yeah.
You know, but if the right leadership were able to consolidate under one roof, then it's going to work.
Yeah, and so. My philosophy has always been, with leadership. My leadership has come from the medicine side, it's come from the fire side, it's come from different places. My kind of key words that I use is developing passionate champions. And that encourages people to kind of give that value-added part to your organization. And without passionate champions, a leader is kind of like, what are you leading? So you really need that. You have to be able to visualize that positive end result. If you can't visualize it, then it's really difficult to really kind of talk about it and produce positive energy and get people coming out. I mean, you look at a PTA, you've got some PTAs where, three or four parents show up and somebody brought some muffins. And then you got other PTAs that, you know, they have these massive organizations and are funding all sorts of things. It's because that somebody within that organization has developed passionate champions and then set them free to do their things, and they bring the wealth into the organization.
So my thought would be that the shared vision of a fire and EMS combined organization has to be what leadership is passionate about, so that we have the passion. Instead of a passionate championship for, you know, make an EMS worker and a passionate champion for fire, that has nothing to do with that. Those two guys, you know, aren't going to get along. It's not gonna, so that umbrella has to be shared vision.
Yeah. And I think there's there are people that are nervous because, like, we kind of went through a transitional change in Orcus. It's real interesting because all of the organizations out there have all of these same crises. They all have the same thing. And so we had it over at Orcus where got a new chief in, and we're sitting there talking, and guy, wouldn't it be nice if, you know, we just had everybody was a firefighter EMT? Wouldn't that make it easy? And so we kind of started doing that. And he was kind of a bulldog, like Harris. And he's like, everybody's going to be a firefighter EMT. It's like, whoa, Mike, you can't do that. Because you got some people that have been EMTs for a long time. They don't want to do fire. That's okay. We value you. You protect your community. And then there are some people on the fire side who's like, I really don't have the capacity to learn medicine. And I understand that. And then, but you've got your middle ground, which maybe is two-thirds, that, yeah, I'll take that on. And so you have to be, another one of the keywords is flexibility. You have to be flexible in building those passionate champions. Because you can run into a brick wall real quick.
Dr. Sullivan, I have some questions about quality of care and how you perceive the quality of EMS treatment. Do you do run reviews? Is that part of you? Is that a statutory thing that you do, or is it just depend on what organization asks you to do that?
It's not a statutory requirement at all for certification, but I kind of make it a requirement for the paramedics. It's not necessarily for the EMTs. But I look at the paramedics and EMTs as one team. So I like to do it with all of them because I think that it improves their working relationship. And that's kind of what I'm here to do, is improve their working relationship so they're working as a team to treat the patient. You know, being able to go back, after, you know, and look at the last month's runs and kind of ask questions like, hey, did you consider this? Hey, did you consider that? Hey, how, and it might not even be medical stuff. We're looking at operation stuff, like who was first in? Where'd you park the ambulance? Why'd you park it there? You know, and did you have a problem getting it out? Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. So it kind of, in fact,
I've got to take this off. Sorry. This
is Orcus. That's solid. 1 second.
It's about time,
Bob. I mean, nice to see you. Thanks for coming. I'm sorry.
Nice meeting all of you.
Take care.
See you later. Nice to meet you.